This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN+.
Kerry Wood is on the mound trying to save it here in the ninth. The Cubs so close. A high fly ball. And for the first time in a century, back-to-back postseasons for the Cubs.
Boy, hard to believe. How old do I feel? I was in the locker room when the pudgy Texan walked in with his dad and his brother going, I can't believe the traffic around this place, and taking a taxi from O'Hare, and now this is his home.
Did you describe him as pudgy Texan back then?
No, he described himself that way. Yeah. He was like, I'm guessing he was 230 pounds, and now he's like 190.
Leaner. Leaner now, yep.
Yeah. But when you marry Sarah Wood, you eat healthy and you work out all the time. Kerry Wood joins us now. Hey, Kerry, good morning.
Hey,
what's Kerry. Up, buddy?
Good morning, guys. How we doing?
We're doing well. Isn't that an accurate statement?
Yes. It's a cap. You feel old because you are old.
Easy.
That's how that works. But yeah, no, it's accurate. The weight's a little bit off. I'm still about 215, but yeah, I was a pudgy little guy.
Unbelievable to think you've gone through your whole career and now your life is about giving back as well as, you know, your charity work. Kerry Wood and his friends will host the first annual Battle of the Bats Home Run Derby Thursday, June 18 at Wrigley Field. Proceeds benefit the Wood Family Foundation and Cubs Charities to help support Chicago's kids. First place team fundraiser, dinner with Kerry on a mutually agreed upon date. The team of six will have dinner at a local area restaurant with Kerry and break bread and swap stories from back in the day. Registration is now open at Cubs.com/derby. What's your take on this young, emerging baseball team?
I like it. We had a rough road trip, but starting the homestand off the right way. I don't know. I like the energy. I like the attitude. I like the way guys are working, and obviously the talent's there. And young team, we're going to go through stretches where we struggle and have some slumps. But, man, I really like what we have out on the field, and I really like our staff.
Kerry, one of the things I think, obviously, with Chris Bryant is people have been most impressed with his patience, his discipline, the way that he's taken so many walks and has shown such great composure at the plate, I think. And when you see how teams are pitching him, has that surprised you? Because I think Joe Maddon kidded that teams are pitching him like he's a Triple Crown winner, and he's not getting a lot to hit, and he's making very good decisions and laying off things, and he's getting on base a lot.
Yeah, and that's everything you could ask for a young guy, even for a veteran guy to be doing what he's doing. But for someone to come up with the amount of time he has here, he's been phenomenal. His discipline at the plate's been great. He's shown he can get to the ball inside, which I thought they would really start pounding him in every series, and he's proved that he can get to that ball. So, you know, he's still gonna go through stretches. He's not gonna look like this for, you know, his entire career. He's gonna have some ups and downs throughout his first couple seasons. But man, he looks great, and he's carrying, you know, this lineup right now. But Rizzo to me has become an all around just a great hitter. And so we get these two guys and get Soler going again, and I really like our lineup. I really like the way we swing the bats. I like our approach at the plate. And we've got a good leader down there, so it's going to be fun to watch for a while.
You know, the other day, Kerry Wood's our guest here on Cap and Haw. The other day, Joe Maddon got tossed. He came out and got his money's worth, and then after the game, really got his money's worth, saying, you're not going to treat them, meaning the Cardinals, one way, and then we got guys that have been in the game for a month, and you're going to call things like that against us. Not going to happen. I'm not going to stand for it. And it reminded me something of with the way he fought for his team when you were playing for Dusty and they had the 5 days in August or late August. You guys mm-hmm. played them, and Dusty went at it with Tony La Russa. And I remember you saying, we knew we had a guy who had our back. That stuff has just a huge effect, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and you see the results. You see, I mean, guys are running hard. We're not dogging balls down the first. We're not popping the ball up and throwing our bats. And I mean, we're playing the game the right way. But that's a result of the respect that he's receiving from these players and what he's given these players and showing them that he does have their back and he's going to support them and teach them along the way as well. But no, you respond to that as a player for sure. When you know your coach is out there and your staff has got your back and even verbally and through the media, I mean, it's a big vote of confidence. And so guys play hard. They're going to play hard for him. Not that they shouldn't play hard anyways, but it's just an extra little it's just something that he brings to the table and gets a little bit more out of his players.
Kerry, last night I think you saw John Lester, pretty workmanlike performance. He has been more consistent of late after a slow start by his standards, and I think that he has very high standards. And I just wondered, you know, it seemed like early on, whether it was because he had the dead arm issue in spring training and maybe didn't have as much chance to prepare for the season as normal, or maybe the big contract. I mean, how do you think the weight of the contract affected his slow start early, or was that just a factor or a product of not being, you know, healthy during spring training?
You know, we haven't seen the John Lester we're going to see, I don't think, yet. Even though he's come around his last couple, three starts, he's not, when the weather warms up here and he gets comfortable and gets a few starts under his belt here at home at Wrigley, we're going to see the John Lester we all want to see and he wants to be and will be. I attribute the slow start to just new place, new team, new city, new everything. It's just everything was so new. I don't think he's a guy that's going to get caught up in pressure. He's pitched in World Series games and big ones and won them, and he's you know, pressure of a contract, I don't think is something that would affect him. I think he's too business oriented and focused to let something like that bother him. I think maybe just cold weather, early start. He's pitched in the cold before, so probably just change the scenery, change and wear a new uniform, expectations of being the guy here and all the hype that came along with it. So I think that's all out of the way now, and we're going to see a pretty impressive John Lester the rest of the way.
And the amazing thing, Kerry, is in the month of May, John Lester's last night after the game, he said, "I stink right now." His ERA is 1.80 in the month of May, and he's 3-0. So, look, if you look at all the analytical numbers I looked at this morning, he's going to trend to look even better and better, yet his numbers for this month are eye-popping.
Yeah, and that shows you the expectations he has for himself. I mean, he feels like he's getting away with pitches and getting away with mistakes that he knows later he probably won't get away with. So when he's, you know, obviously putting up numbers like he's doing and still talking about how he stinks right now, he's not executing all his pitches the way he expects to and the way he will. So I think when we see him tighten that stuff up, he's going to get locked in, and he's got a chance to carry the staff and have everyone feed off of him. And when you get two or three, four guys competing to out-duel each other every night, that's when your bullpen gets rest, and that's when these guys are going eight, nine innings every time out. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, Kerry, last week we were having this discussion after Adam Wainwright's injury while he was batting. You know, if bad.
No DH.
You're a guy who liked to hit,
yes,
I know.
Yes, bring the DH in.
But listen,
would I rather watch Kerry Wood hit, no disrespect, or David Ortiz? Sorry.
And Kerry, last night, I'm watching John Lester, he grimaced after one swing and miss, and you don't want him grimacing.
The second time he said that the bat has bothered
his hand. I can understand the argument, can't you?
I mean, it's baseball. I don't understand what we're doing. One guy gets hurt, and we want to change the rules. That's we get in that habit of, I don't know. I don't like it. I think you're. It's baseball to me. It's the real baseball. It's what we all grew up playing. Pitchers always hit growing up. You played every position, and I don't know. I feel like it makes you a one dimensional player. I don't focus as much on the game when I'm in the American League, and I would, you know, not paying attention. I didn't get a chance to start the American League, but. No, I don't like the DH. I don't like it coming to the National League. I think it changes the game. I think it's a whole other way of baseball. It's I don't know. I like it, and I think pitchers like it. And guys in the National League know that they come over here and they take pride in their hitting. They work on their bunting. You know, that can get you a couple extra innings. You get a bunt down, if the manager knows you can handle the bat, you get a chance to swing the bat in the sixth or seventh inning. He can get you into the eighth or ninth inning. So there's a whole lot more strategy to it for me, and I think it keeps your pitchers athletic.
How much would you have loved to bat eighth?
Yeah, I don't know. I got to see the numbers on that. There's got to be a reason that he does that, and La Russa did it for so long. So I haven't seen the breakdown of what the benefit is of that, but I don't know. I'd have felt guilty hitting in front of a real player.
Look, I understand where you're coming from, but if Kyle Schwarber can get into the lineup, if he's as good as they think he is, I'd rather have Kyle Schwarber hitting than Travis Wood or John Lester or whoever the heck is pitching here. Do you understand?
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Or take it out of the American League and go the same. I don't want two different leagues anymore.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Your DHs aren't usually guys that can – some of them don't even have gloves. I mean, that's how is that a baseball player? You're just a swinger. You know, you're not
right.
playing baseball; you're just hitting. So I don't know. It's a good argument, but I like it the way it is. I think it separates the leagues and makes them a whole different ballgame. But when you see them play in interleague play and in the postseason, it comes into effect for sure.
All right, where can people register again? Cubs.com, correct?
Cubs.com/derby. Get on, check it out. There's going to be only 40 contestants, so we're going to do three rounds. First round, you get 10 outs. Second round, you get 8 outs. And the championship round will be the last.
And where do they hit from?
They're going to hit from home plate, I believe. Center field will be 300 feet, I think, will be the deepest spot. But real baseball, so you're going to have to hit it. John Lieber's going to come out and throw with me, and Dempster will be out, Todd Wellemeyer.
Who's the hitters?
It's going to be whoever. There's individuals. You raise money as a fundraiser. It's like a fundraising event. So each individual has to raise money to be able to get a chance to hit, or you can do teams of four. So people can get online and check out the information on how to get either in your office or for your company, or even a single person can just.
Yeah, I don't want to embarrass everybody. I'll just let the other.
So
40.
You, John Lieber, Wellemeyer, Dempster, Farnsworth.
Farnsworth, he's playing football right now. He's busy.
I saw that. That's quite a story.
How about that?
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? I mean, the guy, although he's built like an outside linebacker.
He still looks great. They said he's averaging like one sack a game.
That's pretty good.
I still remember the Paul Wilson body slams, the best I've ever seen.
I think that's where it all started with the football talk.
Insane. All right, well, I will do all I can to help promote this for you, as will David, but I don't want to come out and hit and embarrass you old Cub pitchers.
Yeah, we wouldn't feel too good about ourselves either if we gave up bombs to you.
Yeah, exactly. If I took any of you deep. How's the family, okay?
Everybody's great. Busy, baseball and basketball, doing all the kids' stuff. Dad's taxi service.
All the best to you, and best to
Sarah.
Thanks,
Kerry.
Guys, I appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right, okay. She's got a kale smoothie waiting for you.
You know she does.
Yeah, see you later.
All right.
There he is, Kerry Wood. Really good dude. 312-235-2525 is our phone number. Still to come on the show.
Steve Ashburner, 1025.
And I would love to get his longtime NBA perspective on LeBron, Blatt, the whole deal.
Also, before we talk to Steve, we can get back to Bulls, because the NBA released the second game in a row.
Transparency report.
Yeah, and this whole thing of the transparency report is
nothing on the timeout.
Nothing on the timeout, but definitely acknowledged that Joakim Noah fouled LeBron.
Which he did.
And this, I know that the Bulls haven't been that deep in the playoffs and they haven't played as big of a games, but how long has this transparency report been out there?
I just heard about it like a week ago.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me.
But how do you not acknowledge we screwed up? That guy right there called a timeout and you never called it.
They're not trained to look for timeouts after
I told you that's what
timeouts.
I was told. But then I saw is it a GIF? Is that what they call him, Mike? A GIF. A GIF of the official looking right at him going, no.
Well, don't look a GIF horse in the mouth.
Thank you very much. Take a time out. 312-235-2525. It's Cap and Haw. You're watching Comcast Sportsnet. Sports Talk Live at 5:30 today. And great Bulls coverage after baseball tonight. Be right back.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
A near mistake was made, and I owned up to it, and I own it. A basketball coach makes 150 to 200 critical decisions during the course of a game. Something I think that is paralleled only by a fighter pilot. And if you do it for 20-something years, you're going to blow one. Or two. And I blew one. Fortunately, it didn't cost us.
I feel the need for speed. Ow!
Okay. You know I've been more supportive of David Blatt than most around here.
Yeah.
That was one of the stupidest references I've ever heard. It's like when Kellen Winslow, was it Kellen?
Junior.
Kellen, I was going to say, what was the dad's name? That
Hold
was
on.
Kellen, too.
Stop talking over the music. Stop. You cannot talk over Top Gun music. Come on, Danger Zone. Kenny Loggins, right? Yeah, Kenny Loggins.
Yeah. Okay, are you
one of the greatest movies?
Rick Rossovich posing on the volleyball court. My wife loves that scene.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Honey, I'm not built like Rick Ross.
Movie.
What do you want me to do? I'm sorry.
It's right back.
Anyway. God, you
Meg Ryan was great in that movie, too.
I know what I
Meg Ryan was outstanding.
She was excellent.
Outstanding. Kelly McGillis.
Anthony Edwards.
Oh, yeah.
He banged his head on the plane and
died.
Before was really good.
Before ER.
Yeah, when he had hair.
Did you just make fun of him banging his head on the plane and dying?
No, I didn't make fun of it.
You said it with a smirk on your face.
No, I didn't.
You did.
I was just waiting for you to fire on me.
That was the pivotal spot in the movie.
Right.
Maverick came to grips.
Maverick became a man.
Yes.
Threw the dog tags in the ocean and went,
absolutely.
Goose, thanks. I'm good now.
That was a great movie.
Anyway.
Great moment.
It was a good movie. You ever see it in IMAX? That's even better. anyway, let's move on.
David Blatt.
I have been more supportive of him than many.
Yeah.
Craig Robinson had some interesting comments, played with him, said he's one of the smarter basketball guys he's been around. I did not think that the LeBron thing was condescending or wrong. Some agree with me, some don't. That all said, reminded me of Kellen Winslow Jr. comparing playing in the NFL to war. When you compare yourself to a fighter pilot, that sounded one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard.
Something I think that is paralleled only by a fighter pilot.
It's okay. Not paralleled by a fighter pilot.
That's just
nobody's
stupid.
Dying because of your misjudgment.
Just stupid.
Nobody's life is on the line. Your livelihood and your career, perhaps. But you're compensated well. You're going to be okay. And because you're a doofus in the last minute of a game doesn't result in anybody's death. So stop trivializing what fighter pilots do.
Agree.
It was just a bad analogy.
Bad.
And I understand people make those all the time. We're on the air. You talk and you say things you may want back all the time. And that may be one of those situations. But when it comes a day after he had such a bad day at the office on Sunday, this guy's not having a good series. He's not doing much for his reputation. And you can see scenarios. You know, you talk about the Bulls parting company with Tom Thibodeau. The Cavs can't be too enamored with David Blatt if they go down and lose the series. I think they may have to win the NBA title for him to feel good about his return. And I know what you're saying about LeBron and all this stuff, but the context of their relationship seems as if that LeBron consistently raises doubt about his faith in David Blatt.
Whoever,
to be honest, the play that was drawn up, I scratched it.
Whoever coaches that team, unless it is Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich, Thibs, if you bring in Scott Brooks, if they fire this guy and they bring in Scott Brooks, mm-hmm. he's going to be perceived as LeBron's handpicked assistant coach.
I disagree with you there. Scott Brooks, yes. Tom Thibodeau, no way.
No, no, that's what I said. Other than Popovich, Pat Riley,
well, I don't know if you've noticed,
Phil
Cap.
Jackson.
I don't know if you've noticed, but Tom Thibodeau is a free agent in waiting.
That's what I'm
potentially.
Saying. Thibs, that's four. Who else am I missing? That
can they trade Tom Thibodeau for Kyrie Irving?
We'll give you Thibs. We'll take Kyrie back. but name me the guys who would be legitimate candidates – still active in basketball. I'm not saying they'd take the job, but Pat Riley.
Izzo.
Izzo
coached the Cavs, instant respect, credibility.
Yeah, I agree. Agreed.
Okay?
Agreed.
And he thought about it at one point.
He did.
Back when LeBron was there the first time, correct?
Insane money.
Before that was when LeBron's first tour.
That was when LeBron was leaving.
That's right. Okay. Well, LeBron's there.
Okay.
Tom Izzo would make LeBron, pay attention.
Okay,
I don't know that there'd be many plays that Izzo's plays that LeBron would scratch.
I guarantee you in the same situation, if that's Thibodeau, Izzo, whoever, he'd be like, give me the ball.
You know what, though? I don't disagree with that. And again, I've never disagreed with that. That's why the Jordan example to me is apples and oranges. Michael Jordan, of course he said, give me the ball, Doug. I want the ball. Players do that all the time. I get it. How often do they go to the podium after an hour after the game, LeBron's the last guy out. Thought about what he's going to say, gets up there, and publicly says it anyway. You undermine your coach's authority when you do that. I don't think he would do that to Tom Izzo. I don't think he would do that to Tom Thibodeau. I don't think he would do that to Pat Riley.
I disagree.
I don't think he would do that to Pat Riley. Are you kidding me?
I think he'd do it to any of them.
What do you think Pat Riley's reaction would have been to a situation like yesterday or at Sunday?
If he had said that in the huddle?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not in the huddle. Get off the huddle. Get off the huddle. I'm talking about the press conference. Perception, reality, world we live in. That's what I'm talking about.
I think Pat would have owned it. I think Pat would have said, yeah, I actually had a play I was going to try. LeBron said, get me the ball. And I said, okay, get out of the way.
Maybe. But I think that you're understating the friction that we perceive from the outside between David Blatt and LeBron James. It's real. Okay, I don't want to say it's real. I don't cover the Cavs. I'm not there every day. What you read and what we've observed this series, my perception is it's a thing. And it's something that could lead to David Blatt's premature exit from Cleveland. Wouldn't shock me at all. We'll ask Steve Ashburn what he thinks.
We will. We'll talk to Claudia and Noor in your calls. 312-235-2525. Get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curve 4K Ultra HD TV at Apt and Glenview. I was in at Apt last week. These bad boys are awesome. With the Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into Apt today, ABT. See the complete selection of Samsung electronics or call them at 847-544-2228. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience, shop where we all shop. It's Apt, ABT. Apt.com. Ask for Steve Shapiro. Apt has been pleasing people since 1936. Franklin Z says, hey, great interview. Kerry Wood, always been my favorite Chicago athlete. And Adam R. says, loving the show today, boys. Bulls must get it done tonight. 312-235-2525. Steve Ashburner, NBA guru, will join us straight ahead. Be right back.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN+.
I think we had some good looks. I thought the defense was really good. We had some shots that just didn't go down, and they'll go down tomorrow. I think it's the flow of the game. You know, definitely some shots that you want them back. You know, big leads, 8 points, 10 points. There's no such thing as a big lead. You know, that doesn't mean anything.
Joakim Noah, Bulls and Cavs game 5 tonight. Series locked up at 2, and D-Haw will be courtside for that one with a column in tomorrow's Tribune. Another gentleman will be all over this, as he is all things NBA, is our friend Steve Ashburner, NBA.com. Steve, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Steve.
I'm doing well, guys. Good talking with you.
Good to have you on. Let's start with Sunday's game. Your takeaways from it. One, we saw the NBA transparency report come out yesterday. I don't even know when they started a transparency report, but they didn't even acknowledge the fact that they had a coach on the court asking for a timeout and no one acknowledged him. No one says they saw it. They didn't even acknowledge that. Your thoughts?
Well, no, it was on there. They just said that none of the referees saw Blatt try to call a timeout. That last 2 minute report, which I believe began during the season, the regular season, in a transparency effort, it noted that Coach Blatt tried to call timeout and when he had none, and then it said none of the referees saw it. So, you know, I haven't seen any footage other than sort of the typical full court shot, you know, high above where you're guessing as to where a grainy, pixelated referee happens to be looking at that point in time. Scott Foster was taking care of, the ball getting inbounded, and the other two guys were near midcourt, maybe even on the other side of it, sort of backpedaling for Cleveland's possession. So I don't know. If they said they didn't see it, you know, that's their story and they're sticking to it. Unless we could get a different glimpse, if somebody has, you know, a Zapruder film that shows Scott Foster eyeballing Blatt and deciding, you know, I'm not going to let this game be decided by this. Well, then, you know, that's a different thing.
One thing, I did talk to somebody who was one of the NBA observers, and I asked him the question. He said, let me just tell you, we know if that guy has no timeouts or not. We are not taught by our bosses to look at a coach that has no timeouts. If we happen to see it and he asks for one, yes, we will whack him with a tee. But he said, we're not taught to, okay, now let's look over at David Blatt and see if he asks for one. He goes, that's how that stuff gets missed.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because you can say that's good instruction from the standpoint that, you know, a referee, if he has it in his head, there's no timeouts. I mean, what? Why should he be looking at that coach? I guess maybe to play gotcha, but he might get thrown, and all of a sudden, you know, the action doesn't start. I mean, if a team is out of timeouts, usually the other team is glad about that, and wants that clock to start running as quickly as it can, and so you want that urgency in that other team. So, you know, theoretically, it would have been in the Bulls' favor for Cleveland to have to rush, as opposed to, you know, well, wait a minute, maybe they're going to call a timeout they don't have. You don't expect, you know, Chris Webber moments in this league, but David Blatt, you know, just about had one.
Steve, I think one of the things got overlooked on Sunday was the fact that Kyrie Irving was playing. I don't know what percent you would want to attach to his health, but it wasn't much more than 60. And the Bulls were unable to take advantage of a guy who is not a maybe that's misstating it, because Derrick Rose did have 31 points. But I think that his presence on the court, you can't help but look at him every trip down and think, how much is he in agony, and how can you take advantage of that? And so which do you think is he at any point a detriment to the Cavs because of his limitations, or is he better being out there, as he pointed out yesterday, even at 30-40%? And how would you contrast his presence in a limited role versus Pau Gasol's absence altogether for the Bulls, which it looks like tonight it'll be a game time decision?
Yeah, I asked Thibodeau this morning after the scrum, you know, about, you know, when is a player out there hurting his team, and whose decision is it at that point? Now, you know, the hierarchy is always, okay, the player gives you the thumbs up or thumbs down whether he feels capable of going. The medical staff weighs in terms of the possibility of him aggravating or hurting himself. And then it's on the coaches, really, if a guy stubbornly is out there, like it sounds Irving, you know, has been. He refuses to come off, and Blatt and his coaches aren't taking him off. And Tom said, you know, look, a guy like Irving can be helpful as a decoy, in essence. He didn't use that word, but, you know, you have to attend to him on the off chance that he might summon, you know, some, you know, grit or adrenaline or whatever, and be able to do some things. And if he's at some lower percentage, if you say 60, whatever, that still might be better than their next best option. Do you want to go to Mike Miller or Sean Marion or James Jones or, you know, Dellavedova for longer minutes? You know, in game four, I was skeptical. They talked so much about how hurt Irving was. I thought they were playing a little bit of possum. But then when I saw game four, you know, play out, it seemed like, yeah, he's not the Kyrie Irving that, you know, is MVP of All-Star games and international play. So, to me, the key for the Bulls is they talked about it today, so they got to play faster. And they've got to get the ball moving side to side. They can't, you know, they can't let Kyrie Irving play defense on one leg, never mind his offense, but they need to exploit him and really push the pace such that, you know, now he's probably faster on one leg than many other guys on two, but they need to push it such that, you know, he's scrambling just to keep up.
So,
and, you know, they didn't do that.
Do you think that Tom Thibodeau feels the way you feel, that get the ball out of the basket when they score, let's inbound it, and let's go, and let's see if we can get – Will Perdue said they got to score 100 points. He said they can't be 85-95.
Well, you know, that all sounds good until you get two or three turnovers in three or four possessions, and then all of a sudden, you know, hanging onto that ball starts to have more appeal. They just had, you know, a bevy of shot clock violations, which – you know, the worst possible thing. I mean, that so lets a defense off the hook.
Yeah, four of them.
Opens them. You come away empty. You get no chance even for offensive boards. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a mess. I mean, they've had, you know, that some of that shooting problems, you know, when they're shooting air balls, and you know, that's been, you know, Joe Keane's stock and trade lately. You got to at least get it on the rim so you get a chance to reset that clock. But, no, I agree. I think, you know, I think Chuck Swirsky tweeted out something recently about how many of their shots have come in the final 7 seconds of possessions. Now, that's kind of normal in playoffs, but it hasn't worked for Chicago. In game four, according to Swirsky, they're like 4-17 in those situations. They need to get into early offense and get better on the glass. And it seems to me, what do you guys think? I mean, they've missed a lot of putbacks. Normally, they're good for that stuff.
They miss more layups, I think, than any team in the NBA. It was so frustrating to watch.
Joakim's not healthy.
But they cannot finish. And you're right. The putbacks, the layups, it just gets to the point where you expect them to miss those shots.
Yeah, and you know, and what they have to be mindful of is, remember, games one and two, Derek didn't get to the line at all. Now, they're back in Cleveland. They have to make sure that doesn't return as a, you know, a bugaboo, whatever you want to call that. That has to be done with. He has to force action that way because that's where you're going to get points when other things fall down.
A bugaboo. I love it. And you said use the word bevy too, Steve. We know we have you on here for your vocabulary. It's tremendous. But listen, in game three it was, when the Bulls went small down the stretch, it was really worked out for them. I thought they were more athletic. It served its purpose, and they win that game. When they went small in game four, I thought that the Cavs countered by leaving Mozgov in the game, and I think that he was dominant at times in the fourth quarter, and I don't think it did pay off for the Bulls. Do you think that Tom Thibodeau, because of the way things ebb and flow in the playoffs, will be more reluctant to go small tonight in crunch time?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how much that's within his control if Gasol is not available. Now, Powell came out this morning, did some stretching, and is allegedly a game-time decision in terms of whether he can play. Tom told me, you know, that even when I asked him all about that injury stuff, that even a guy in a short amount of time, if he can only play for a little bit, that can make a little bit of a difference. But I would imagine that wouldn't be late in the game then. If Gasol's able to play at all, you'd think it would be when he's warm and loosened up, and not after he has sat a couple of times. So, you know, it really comes down to who's available. If Joakim's minutes are high by the fourth quarter, then, you know, they could say they want to play bigger, but that might not be within their control. It really would require Mirotić to make shots that he missed on Sunday, and Dunleavy as well.
Or they might want Noah to stay on the bench.
Then you got to get Mozgov out of there.
And maybe at some point, Noah's just an offensive liability.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has been that. I was at least heartened to see him taking, as ugly as they were, taking shots. Prior to that, he wasn't even looking to the rim. I mean, you could have him be 12 feet from the basket, and you could stand underneath the basket because he wasn't going to do a thing. Or at least he was throwing these things up there where you figure he or somebody else could maybe go get them. But they, you know, that's at least a baby step toward keeping Cleveland's defense, you know, half honest.
We're talking to Steve Ashburner for a couple more moments here from NBA.com on Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus. We've been talking a lot about David Blatt. He compares himself to a fighter pilot, which sounded stupid, so ridiculous. But I've been more supportive of him as a coach than many. He seems like a very easy punching bag. I did not have a problem that LeBron, A, changed the play, or B, brought it up at the press conference. I think it goes on more than people realize. Did you?
Not with a little bit more with B. You know, I thought it was a bit unseemly for LeBron to introduce it as flatly as he did. I mean, it did seem to pack some intended embarrassment for David Blatt. You know, there's ways you could say that. You know, you could use we and our a lot more than LeBron seems to do with David Blatt. There's a passive aggressiveness going on there that's unmistakable. And, you know, it's a tough predicament. You know, people have said, well, you know what, Eric Spoelstra and LeBron, you know, they had some conflict and pulled in different directions that first year with Miami, except Pat Riley had Eric Spoelstra's back. Nobody has David Blatt's back quite like that here in Cleveland. He got the job before LeBron decided to come back, and this became a different situation by far. Now, Blatt hasn't helped himself because he's been, you know, a little bit arrogant in his defensiveness, and he wants to remind everybody that all those years coaching internationally, you know, carries weight in this league, and unfortunately, I think it carries less weight than he thinks or would like.
Appreciate the time.
See you tonight, Steve.
You got it, guys.
Have a good time in Cleveland.
Yeah.
See you later. There he is, Steve Ashburner, NBA.com. Got a good perspective.
Yeah, he does. He definitely put that well. I don't think anybody has a problem with a superstar changing the play to put the ball in his hands to decide it. I think people admire that, but I don't think people admire taking credit for changing the play publicly and embarrassing your coach.
Yeah, we'll agree to disagree on that one. No big deal. 312-235-2525. We'll go back to the phones. Hey, folks, late night last night doing Cubs. David's got a late night tonight in Cleveland. Between this show, Sports Talk Live, Cubs pre-post on Comcast, I work a lot of hours. I get to play in America's Disneyland, though. For the few hours I have, it's important for me to get a deep, good night, restful sleep. And I've never slept better now that I sleep on my trusty friend right here, my MyPillow. First night you sleep on one, you'll understand why they've sold over 5 million of these bad boys. Three-piece interlocking fill conforms to your preferred shape. They come in four different support levels that guarantees you the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. MyPillow has a cooling effect that keeps your head cool throughout the night. They're so confident you'll love them, you get a 60-day money-back guarantee that they'll refund 100% of your purchase price if you don't like it. But trust me, like me, you're going to love your new MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code CAP, K-A-P, 50% off or 800-299-5854. MyPillow.com or 800-299-5854. Promo code K-A-P, CAP, 50% off. MyPillow.com. Quick timeout. More with Cap and Haw right after this.
Now, more Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN+.
There's not much you can say other than, you know, that game is gone. So hopefully that you've established that habit through the course of the season. You learn from the game, you know, analyze it, the things we could have done better. Get ready for the next one.
Do your job. There he is, our guy, Tom Thibodeau. Tonight, Game 5 in Cleveland at the Quicken Loans Arena. D-Hall will be there, and he'll be back with us tomorrow morning.
One thing that Tom Thibodeau talked about yesterday was that he did clarify. He called for the review.
Correct.
And then frantic last few seconds. And you can see why. I mean, you thought—
Make sure the ball wasn't theirs.
And he did explain that his sort of— Yeah, I thought he handled it well when Casey Johnson asked him about— You know, the role technology should play in the fact that it gave the Cavs time to draw up a play and to gather. And I think Thibs was like, well, you know, you'd like to ideally move forward as they sort of are learning this, have teams gather on the court, but they can't have a timeout, right? So they have to prevent them from having a timeout like we discussed. But he was pretty good yesterday. He was in a decent mood for a guy coming off a loss that
time. He was in surprisingly good mood.
You think I'm talking about Game 7?
Yeah, he laughed.
He did laugh. Thibs likes to laugh.
Went out to dinner after the game on Sunday with his mom and his brother and their and his kids.
Did
his
he?
Brother's kids.
Is that was that? I did not know that.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, I guess he's, you know, I wonder how tough Tom Thibodeau's mom was on him and his dad growing up. You know, like, I wonder if that was a do your job type of household.
Right.
Had to have been for him.
Mom,
to
I got 104. I can't go to work today. Do your job.
You know, that's a Patriots thing. You know that, right?
Right.
They've trademarked that.
Do your job.
Yeah. So the Bulls are, and you know, Tom Thibodeau is a Patriots guy.
Huge.
Big Belichick guy. Big Brady guy.
I would love to be able to sit in the office with him, no microphones, and just talking to him and go, okay, what do you think of the Brady thing? Put your bias aside that you're friends, and what do you think? Love to hear it.
It'd be good.
By the
Unplugged.
Way, Olin Kreutz texted in. He's watching the show.
Uh-huh.
Thinks the penalty for Brady is just stupid. Stupid.
He's like, things are going to be fine. This isn't ISIS.
It's not ISIS.
Nice.
That's right.
Let's go back to the
phones.
All
right, let's go to the phones.
How about the Claudia?
I've handled dozens of balls.
That's right. Had them manipulated before.
Bob Kravitz, 1055.
Claudia in Belvedere. Claudia, what's going on, Buttercup?
Hi, Claudia.
Hi, guys. I got quite a few things for you to think about, so I'm going to go right into them.
Bring it on.
Number one. Okay, one, you were talking yesterday about if you were Haw, you know, what you would do. I want to know if you were Haw and you were in the locker room or in the interview room after the game, last game, Bulls game, what would you have asked Tibbs? Number two, when the teams both play hard like they did in the thing, the advantage of a home game is usually you always have more free throws than the visitors. I agree with Purdue. We're not getting the calls. We're not being respected, and I'd like to know what you think about that. Three, why can't LeBron be a player coach? And four, about Cuddy's new kids, I'd like to congratulate him. And this tells me at least we know something that Cuddy's good at. Thank you.
Love you, Claudia.
Okay.
Thank
bye.
You, Claudia.
See you later.
That's a good phone call.
Yeah,
right
he's
there.
Been very his.
That's a deficient quality
his
phone
passer
call.
Passer rating's been very good. Right. 3 and 4 years, he's been very, very efficient.
Okay, that's great. Congratulations to the Cutlers. I don't know what she wanted me to ask Tom Thibodeau after the game. Said if Haw was in there, the interview, what would you ask Tom Thibodeau?
Dave Haw is just a bandwagon guy.
And it's Haw for anybody.
Bandwagon.
Memo to Jim DeShays. Yeah. He's reading the promo last night. Mike's not watching the Cub game. He's watching the Sox game. But on the Cub game, yeah, listen to Cap and Hog tomorrow on Comcast yeah. Sportsnet.
Didn't watch it. I did hear about it, though.
Hey, how you doing, Hug?
I watch the Cubs with the sound down. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding, Jim. Just kidding.
Nice. Nice.
Claudia.
If I was in that locker room or in that press conference,
right.
I would have probably asked, boy, I would probably have asked Tom Thibodeau about the review. Casey Johnson did that yesterday.
No, I think what she's getting at is the defense at the end of the game, and I think he was asked about that. I think he was totally asked about.
Well, I wanted to be next to Taj. I wanted to be the guy that said, should you guys have defended it differently?
He was asked that, Captain.
And
but we heard that. I mean,
the guy didn't go back at him at all.
Well, I know that's easy to say, but nobody did follow up with that. But you're right. But Tom Thibodeau was at least asked about his decision to defend the guy taking the ball out of bounds rather than double off the ball, and whether it's LeBron or anybody else, but it would be LeBron. And he answered it adequately, I thought. I mean, everybody is going to have a thought on how to defend that last sequence. And Tom Thibodeau, one of the most respected defensive minds
no
in the
question.
NBA, his thought was to do it the way they did it. It didn't work. So certainly he opened himself up to scrutiny. But I did think he was asked appropriately after the game why he did what he did. The other question Claudia had regarded LeBron James as a player coach. He already is.
Pretty much is.
And Nemo, I mean, you don't call him that, but essentially that is what he is. As they say, it is what he is.
It is what it is. That's it.
Do your job.
All right, Noor in Evanston. Hello, Noor.
Hey, Noor. Hello, Noor.
Noor, go
today, Junior.
Hey, Noor.
How's it going?
What's up?
Good.
Let's roll. Come on, baby.
All right, I got three quick questions. Number one, if the refs keep deciding these games this way, I'm going to stop watching the NBA altogether. And that's a synopsis from a lot of guys on my job. They're tired of the refs just taking over these games, and, you know, and these outcomes are just terrible. And number two, how come they don't play each one more, a lot more for his defense? And one more quick question. They better start looking for Joakim Noah's replacement, because I don't think the guy can jump over a puddle. That's all I have to say.
Thanks,
Noor. Thanks, man. Yeah, you could see last summer that Joakim was not in a good way.
Last summer?
When the reports started coming out about his knees. Yeah.
Well, the first report was that he had arthroscopic knee surgery. I don't think anybody was overreacting to that. He had, you know, spells where he's active. At the end of the year, he had a stretch there where he was very productive. He hasn't been in the playoffs. It hasn't been something that he has been able to stay on the court to help the Bulls offensively.
You got
to
take what
he's missing a ton of
Bulls
layups.
Are picking 22. I was talking about this with Mark Schanowski yesterday over
22?
At the office. Picking 22. You have got to take whatever 7-footer is on the board. You got to find a big long body.
If
you should have taken Gorgui Dieng from Louisville instead of Tony Snell.
If one is there, worth taking. You don't want to reach for a guy that isn't ready. If you have What if you're drafting Jimmy Butler's replacement? Because as our guy Shams Charania reported yesterday.
Well, we've had in studio.
Yeah, from RealGM.com. The Lakers are preparing a big max offer.
But the Bulls have said we'll match any
offer. Yeah, we reported that in January. They're going to match. And Jimmy has said all the right things. But again, that dynamic not to be like sky is falling here, but we don't know what the situation in the context of that decision is going to be when he makes it. Who's going to be the coach?
Go to work, Jimmy. Go to work.
What is the status of Joakim Noah going to be? What happens with the rest of this team?
Joakim has 1 year left on his deal.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. And I think Jimmy Butler has to make a decision on that until July, right?
July.
That's when restricted free agency and free agency. So what will the Bulls look like in when July 1st comes? And if you follow through your idea of, well, you got to trade Joakim if somebody takes him, what if they trade him on draft day?
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to get diddly squat now.
I don't think you would either.
You would have last summer.
But I'm saying if you traded Joakim under your scenario and you're Jimmy Butler and you're looking at, oh, new coach, where's my guy, what's going on here, then you see Hollywood.
But there's nothing he can do about it. Bulls match anything they want. He's not unrestricted. He's got no options here, no leverage, none. He's restricted.
So it's a moot point.
Moot point. You can put whatever offer you want. If I match it, you're stuck. They should have traded Joakim last summer. That was not a proactive move.
We'll see. I think you'll feel differently if they win the NBA championship. Which is still a possibility, by the way. The Bulls have not lost this series.
There's
tonight,
no, correct.
Who wins tonight will win the series?
I can't say that.
Is tonight the biggest game in the post-Jordan era?
No.
Why? How could Sundays be bigger than tonight?
Sundays was to take the stranglehold.
How could Sundays game be bigger than tonight? Because the stranglehold that you have on the series if you're the Cavs, because you won Sunday's biggest game. Bulls win tonight. Bulls in control. They're coming home Thursday to clinch it.
Bulls lose tonight.
Yeah.
They come home Thursday. They win. Now you're talking about a massive game seven.
Maybe they win Thursday. Bulls lose tonight.
I will tell you unequivocally, mark this down, there will be a game seven in this series.
Everybody needs to chill.
That'll be Sunday. Could be going. What time would that be? Afternoon? Bulls, Hawks. Bulls, Hawks.
Could be on at the same time.
Could they be on the same time? Could the Hawks be playing a matinee on Sunday in Anaheim?
I'll be driving back from Kentucky.
Bulls, Hawks.
Belly full of bourbon.
Listening to the Swirsk.
My wife will be driving, and I'll be watching on my iPad and my laptop together on my lap.
I hope you're not driving.
No, Mindy isn't driving.
All right.
I have a driver. Her name is my wife. Bob Kravitz, Indy star who broke Deflategate. He's the man that broke that story. Guess what? You get him here. He'll be on next. Good friend of our own David Haw. He joins us straight ahead on Cap'n Haw.